Investigative reporter Lee Rood has spent the last year solving people's problems. She writes the Reader's Watchdog column for the Des Moines Register. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we'll look back over the past year with Lee Rood. We'll talk about the problems she has solved, the people she has helped, and the lessons she's learned. Then, Brian Morelli, Associate Regional Editor for Patch.com in Iowa, has spent the last year collecting weird stories from the state of Iowa. I'll talk with him about what he's learned in the past year as well. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. People with problems they just can't solve have had someone new to turn to for the past year. Lee Rood has been writing the Reader's Watchdog column for the Des Moines Register since last January. This hour, we'll talk with her and take a look back over the past year. And later in the hour, we're going to talk about weird news of Iowa with one of the editors of Patch.com. But first, Lee Rood is here with me now. Hello, Lee.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
And let's talk a little bit about your background before you started writing this column. You've been a distinguished investigative journalist for quite some time.
Yes, I've worked for the Register for about 15 years. I started out as an assistant editor and then moved back into reporting. I spent a lot of years as an investigative reporter, and then for about a half dozen, I was the investigations editor. So I fielded a lot of calls that came into the paper with people wanting us to look into different issues and oversaw quite a few big projects by the Register staff.
How did the idea for this column come about?
Well, a lot of the calls that we would receive from people, not just me but others, people would want us to look into specific problems. And it wasn't necessarily the type of thing that we would devote, you know, several weeks of research to or do a front page investigation. But it was very important to the people who called us. And it seemed to me that we needed a place for that, especially now. A lot of people are having a hard time and are kind of bumping their heads up against the wall trying to get answers.
And why was this something you wanted to do?
I thought, you know, we have a long and proud history at the paper of investigative and watchdog journalism, but I thought it was important for us to help, you know, kind of fit our mission of improving the community sort of one person at a time. And so it was a year and a half ago, after our new editor, Rick Green, started at the paper, that I approached him with the idea.
And when you first thought about this column, and you know, as a journalist, I think a lot of us have at various times in our careers thought about, you know, being the kind of journalist that's out there really fighting for the common man, you know, mm-hmm. for truth, justice in the American way. When you first thought about this, envisioned this column, what were the kinds of things you thought you'd be doing?
Well, we hoped it would be a mix. Certainly, I have a lot of experience reporting on government, and so we wanted to help people navigate state and local government and problems that they have with accountability or sunshine issues there. But also, you know, we needed a place in the paper for consumer issues and problems. We also knew that people had problems from time to time with private businesses, with nonprofits. And so we're hoping it would be a catch-all, and it really has.
Well, I really enjoyed the column the article that you wrote. Looking back on your first year, you published in December in the Des Moines Register, where you got a phone call from someone who was having trouble with a business in Urbandale. And at the same time, you were trying to solve a suspicious death.
Yeah.
That must be an interesting balance between solving what seem like minor problems, although, of course, they're not necessarily minor to the person who's pursuing them, but
exactly.
and some really major ones at the same time.
Yeah, you know, it's really been incredible. The woman who actually called me that day wanted me to help her locate a purse that had been missing at a repair shop. And I was really busy, and I tried to kind of tell her gently, do you really need me to help out? Then I thought about it, and I thought, you know, she said, but your column says that you will help with business and whatnot. And I said, you know, you're right. So I called. We found the purse. She was happy. I always have several things going at one time. And obviously some things take a lot more research and reporting than others. So I just, you know, work on several things, and I write them as they're timely and they kind of come to fruition.
Do you ever get calls from people and just give them advice on how they could solve the problem themselves? Because it strikes me that you must hear from a lot of people who maybe just don't know how to navigate in the year 2012, who don't necessarily have access to the internet and other places where a lot of us turn to solve our problems.
Yeah, I mean, I lost count of the number of people who have called me. It's been well over many, many hundreds. And the vast majority of people that I talk to, I simply point in one direction or another. You need to talk to the Consumer Protection Division of the Attorney General's office. You need to talk to Legal Aid, etc. And really, it's only when people have really hit a dead end that I try to go after that for them and do a column.
Can you give me an example of a problem that you've helped to solve that you thought would be simple and turned out not to be?
Oh, a lot of the ones I've written about are like that. The very first column that I wrote about the death of a guy by the name of Chad Nauman. He was in his mid-30s, and he had been partying at a hotel in Urbandale called the Motel Relax. And his sister contacted me. She was really upset about the fact that he had overdosed in this motel room with drugs provided by other people. And people who were partying with him in the motel room watched him slowly die over several hours and did nothing. And so she wanted some sort of accountability there and wanted to know why police hadn't take action, why the motel owners weren't doing more about the drug activity there. And, you know, what we discovered through the course of several weeks of reporting is that part of it had to do with the law, you know, and the evidence that police had managed to compile at the time. So Lisa Nauman, the sister, had some successes getting police to clean up the drug activity and criminal activity at the motel, but she still very much wants lawmakers to take action to tighten the law and make sure that people who fail to come and render aid to another could be held criminally responsible.
And this is a subject that you've returned to at least, what, three times in your column. This is mm-hmm. This is something that you've watched over the long term.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because of what Lisa brought to my attention, I heard from, I think, about a dozen other people who had watched loved ones die of overdoses from, you know, maybe morphine or something else provided by an acquaintance. And they really told me that they wanted to have police and prosecutors hold those people more responsible. They formed their own group, actually, after some of the columns.
And you've been following the progress specifically at that motel where not just Chad Nauman died, but two other people in a period of 2 years as well.
Yeah, that's correct. And I know as a result of that, I've been in contact with the police chief and the motel owners, and they've both been working together to sort of stamp out some of that. There was a gamut of criminal activity actually going on there.
How do you decide? You mentioned that you want to follow up on things that people are really at their wits' end, that they have no other way to solve this problem. But you must get more of those than you can possibly pursue. How do you decide what to pursue?
Well, I sort of have developed a criteria by now. Number one, you have a lot of people who want to tell me things that they want me to look into sort of off the record. Well, this is a column, you know, so you...
And this is on the record.
Yeah, this is definitely on the record. You have to be willing to use your name. I won't, and I'm just not interested in getting into really dicey sort of family squabbles, divorces, probate battles, things like that. And then I have to be able to help, you know, I have to have some sort of access to records through government or whatever. If, for example, you have a tax problem, I can't really help you with that because, you know, tax information is, you know, confidential under federal law. So I try to also pick a very diverse mix of topics. You know, I don't like predictable columns, and I don't, you know, think most readers do either. So I just try to keep it interesting and cover as many topics as I can, both big and small.
There are a number of topics that you have covered that come down to, I'll just pick an example, like in Indianola, there's a street that Simpson University wants to close to create a ped mall or pedestrian mall. A lot of people in the town don't want to close that street because they drive on it. Do you find that you have to, in this position, do you have to pick a side?
No. In fact, the reporting is the same. And you'll note in my columns, there isn't any opinion there. The difference is that it starts out from the perspective of the person who wrote or called me. That's the important part. You have to look at it through their eyes. And they always have a question that they want answered, a question or two. And so that's how I begin. And then I hope from there it's an educational process. You know, why I just want to explain to other people why, you know, they're having such a difficult time with this particular problem.
Is it difficult to remain objective for you? And you obviously, as a reporter for many years, you needed to remain objective. Now, as a columnist, not all columnists do remain objective. It's kind of a different ballgame. Is it difficult to try to remain objective?
No, not really. You know, my journalism has always been about the people who contact me. So that's really no different. And, you know, as I said before, it just starts out from their perspective and goes from there. You know, the people who contact me don't always win. You know, they're sometimes disappointed with what I have to tell them from my reporting, and that's okay. But, you know, I'm hoping that they'll learn something from the process.
I'm talking with Lee Rude. She's been writing the Reader's Watchdog column for the Des Moines Register since last January, although she's been an investigative journalist for many years. We're talking about the last year, the problems she's solved, the people that she's encountered, the lessons she's learned in the past year. And you're welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up later this hour, we're going to explore some of the weirder news of Iowa in the past year with an editor for Patch.com in Iowa. Right now, I'm talking with Lee Rude. She is the columnist for the Des Moines Register who writes the Reader's Watchdog column. And she's been doing it for about a year now. So we're looking back over the past year, the problems that she's helped people solve, the people that she's gotten involved with, and some of the things that she's learned over the past year. And you're welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Lee, one of the things that I really enjoy about your column is not just that you can get out there and get answers for people, but I love it when you have a problem that someone has and you can open it up to the readers of the Des Moines Register and they can solve that problem. That must be an amazing feeling to take something that is troubling someone so much and say, okay, can you help this person?
Yeah, that's the part of the column that really has blown me away. I mean, things, and it's sort of taken on a life of its own. At Christmas, for example, there was a woman whose dog ran off and was taken in by somebody else. Obviously, that person wanted to keep her dog. And it was only after that this dog was severely injured and broke a leg in two places that the dog was returned to her. She couldn't have, you know, afford to have the dog's leg repaired. And so she made a plea to me to find a veterinarian who was willing to help. This was on Christmas Eve, or Christmas week, I think. And I wrote the column on Christmas Eve. And by Christmas Day, I had probably four or five veterinarians willing to do the surgery on the dog's leg, and several people, I mean, numerous people who wanted to send this woman money so that her dog, Rye, could get the surgery he needed.
That must be just so overwhelming to see people really come out and say they want to help. On the other hand, does it also feel a little like a slippery slope? Are you nervous at all about doing that? Because I'm sure that there are lots of other people whose dogs have problems and cats have problems that they can't afford to solve. Did you get a flood
that
of people contacting you after that?
Yeah, I had quite a few people who contacted me after that column, and they simply couldn't afford to take care of their animals. And to that, I said, you know, this was sort of an extraordinary case. You know, I don't want to be doing this all the time. There are programs out there who, you know, payment programs that can help people with those kinds of needs. So I do have to watch it that way. A lot of times with the column, what I find myself doing is connecting one person to another. And I don't really have an ethical problem with that. I don't. I wrote a column recently about some problems that people in a senior apartment building were having with Mediacom. I got several calls and emails after that, people wanting help with their cable service. And I had to tell them, you know, I don't want to be the customer service rep for Mediacom, but be glad to, you know, put you in touch with them and the people who help me.
And we have a caller on the line. You're welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Patty's on the line from Des Moines. Hi, Patty.
Wonderful. Hello. Thank you on behalf of the people that go to Union Park in Des Moines. That was one of the first columns I ever read. And I talked to some guys that were working around there, and they said, oh, it's just going to have to stay the way it is until your column hit the paper. And almost overnight, it was kind of cleaned up. It's a beautiful park now. But my problem is with the nursing home my friend was staying in. I contacted corporate headquarters about that, and they talked to me back. And then just about call lights being on for a long time, the doctors not seeing them, and patients not getting their meds. And after corporate headquarters, I contacted the state, and they said, oh, you know, it's just hearsay, since you didn't really see these people not getting their call like that. It's just it's a bad situation, and I don't know what to do about that.
Have you, who on the state level have you talked to?
The 800 number that was in the book.
Okay. Well, if you'd like, I mean, you can write in. We have a reporter at the Register who does a lot on nursing homes. I'm sure you're aware. His name is Clark Kaufman, and he's kind of the specialist in that area. That's another thing that I do there. You know, I try not to trample too much on other people's beats. So a lot of times what I will do is put people in touch with the reporter at the Register who has the most experience in that particular area.
Well, Patty, thank you so much for your call. And why don't you tell us about Union Park in Des Moines, since Patty brought that up?
Well, that was a case where a woman whose house was across the street from Union Park was very upset because there were a lot of road equipment and sewer equipment that had been out there in front of her house, covering her house with dust and debris for a long time. And she came to me and complained, wrote a column about it. And not long after that, the city finally began to clean up that area. And as you know, Union Park has had quite a few changes for the better. So that was sort of the one I saw left in the area.
You mentioned how after the column about the dog that needed assistance, you heard from a lot of people whose animals need assistance. Is that a challenge for you? Because obviously you want to have a great deal of variety, but I'm sure every column inspires people with similar problems to get in touch with you.
Yeah. I did a column about HOAs, homeowners associations, which actually there are quite a few problems in Iowa with those groups. If you belong to a homeowners association, people have had difficulty getting access to financial records in particular. And that has sort of fed upon itself. I find that if an issue is sort of a big deal to readers, if I get a lot of reaction, then I try to do follow-ups. That was the case. There was a woman in Winterset that I wrote about. There were some volunteers at a local high school who were trying to do a really wonderful thing and build her an all-new house. She had been a beloved librarian, and her current house was falling down. And the school group there at the high school got together and started to build her a house, but things were delayed over the summer. Kids went, the principal left the school, and so this woman and her caretaker were very concerned that she was going to go another winter without heat. I wrote a column about that, and several people came to the fore and helped out with money, supplies, even just help with construction. And as a result, Violet Ross was able to move into her house her new house in Winterset over right after Thanksgiving.
You also, this is a very unusual column that you wrote about your own stolen wallet.
Oh, yeah.
tell us about that journey.
Well, I didn't really intend to write about that. My boss and I kind of joked around that it, he thought that there were some interesting elements along the way that I should write about. I've been out one night on a Friday night with two girlfriends, and I stopped in at a place that I go to frequently. It's on the way home. There was a band. I had been dancing, and someone lifted my wallet out of my purse that night. And I reported it to police that weekend, and nothing sort of happened with that. So I convinced the detective to give me to get the pictures of my credit cards that were used over the weekend. That's how I knew it was stolen. Get the picture of the person who was actually using my credit cards. And then I went looking for him. And I found him eventually.
That was a fairly unprecedented experience, I would guess, for the police.
Yeah, they... I don't know what they thought about me writing about it. But it's true that... police have their hands full like anybody else. And so I think the lesson of that, you know, if they're willing, is to try to help out with the investigation as best you can. You know, if you get your credit card stolen, and you can aid them by finding out the time and the place, you know, exactly where, getting the information together for them, telling them as much as you know to make their job easier.
Do you think being an investigative journalist is what made it possible for you to actually do this?
Either that or just my sheer bullheadedness.
Well, that's why I'm asking, because can all of us who are bullheaded, you think, make something like that happen for ourselves? Or do you think that you had special skills?
Yeah, I have a few special skills. They're not, you know, that helped me. I knew, you know, after this weekend where this guy lived, what his history was. I knew sort of all about him very, very soon. But it still had to go through the court system, and we have ways, you know, we have databases and stuff at the register where I can find where people live, and that actually helped me connect two brothers who were estranged for 18 years. One brother in Colorado was looking for his brother he hadn't seen or talked to in quite a while. He was living in Iowa, didn't know where. And I managed to track him down at a Des Moines house. It was very easy, but the two guys were thrilled. And the one brother wound up moving back to Colorado with his brother.
What do you think over the past year has been the most difficult problem for you to solve?
That's a tough one. Some that... You know, obviously the most difficult ones, there are a couple that I haven't even written about. there was a man whose grown child had died in a car accident. Somebody fell asleep at the wheel, and he wanted me to locate, this was in another state, but he was an Iowa resident, and he wanted me to find the last person who spoke to his child alive. And I wasn't able to do that, and I felt bad about that. There was another case, I think I mentioned in the year-end column, of an unsolved homicide, and we're still sort of working on that. I'm still hopeful that maybe something would happen. Don't want to talk too much about it, but haven't gotten enough from readers or police to really do anything with that.
To the people you help, you must seem like a little bit of a superhero or a best friend. after you help someone, obviously you have other problems to solve, other columns to write, other people to work with. Do you find that the people who you've helped want to continue their relationship with you?
Some do. There's a woman in Indianola I wrote about. Her name is Frida Wallace. And she was cut off from hospice care. She wrote in because she worried she was going to be cut off from hospice care, and she was. And it was really troubling because the hospice care folks were the only folks who were really coming to her apartment there in Indianola. I still talk to Frida about every other day. And as a result of the column, Simpson couple, a couple of students have volunteered and just gone over there and sort of helped her out so she isn't as lonely. She's got people looking after her, people from her church and some friends bringing food. But, you know, it's not an easy life when you're on your own. So I continue to talk to Frida, find out what's going on in her world. There are several readers that I stay in touch with. And then others, you know, they just sort of disappear as soon as I've written about them.
Are there times when you have to gently let people know that, you know, that this is my job, this is what I do, and I have to keep doing it with other people?
Yeah, I do. I figure there's, you know, when you're 84, 86 years old, if you just want to bend my ear for 5 minutes, I've got 5 minutes time. But, you know, if what I don't have time for is somebody whose problem, you know, I address one problem, and then they come back to me, you know, 2 weeks later with another problem and then another, that, you know, I sort of, it's one column per customer.
I can imagine, for example, with Frida, that developing a relationship like that brings something to your life as well. How do you think that this experience of the past year has changed you?
It has. I mean, there's no doubting that it has. A strange thing happened about midway through this year. My husband was diagnosed with a very aggressive cancer. And under other circumstances, maybe in past years, work would have been the last thing on my mind. But this column has really, you know, listening about the problems that other people have, and, you know, their struggles has really, taken my mind off what's going on in my own home. And it makes you realize that everybody's got problems and everybody needs a little help. And it's really been a neat experience to see how readers really come to the aid of others.
How is your husband now?
He's hanging in there.
Oh, good. Is this what you hoped it would be?
It's, you know, it is. It's been great. I think it's going to get even better. You know, the first year was sort of learning. We had no idea what to expect, just absolutely no idea, and wondered if most of the people who called would be sort of crackpots. That's not the case. And as it turns out, there's some really interesting issues out there. And now that we kind of have a feel for things, I think that readers are going to help each other out even more, and the topics are going to get more and more diverse. And I'm really hopeful. I really, really like this job. It's been about the most fun and rewarding one I've had at the Register thus far.
Do you find that every week, every month, you get more and more people contacting you?
It ebbs and flows. And I used to think it had to do with the subject matter. And sometimes that's true. There'll be weeks when, you know, I only hear from just a few folks. And then some days, just for whatever reason, I'm just bombarded all day long. So I haven't quite figured out yet.
Well, it'll be exciting and fascinating to see what problems you solve in the next year.
Thank you.
Lee, thank you so much for talking with us today.
You're welcome.
Lee Rood is the columnist who writes the Reader's Watchdog column for the Des Moines Register. It was launched last January, and she spent the last year solving readers' problems, sometimes connecting readers with other people who can help them with their problems. Lee Rood, in just a moment, we're going to talk about a different kind of news in Iowa, the weird news of Iowa. Brian Morelli will be here. He's an associate regional editor for Patch.com in Iowa. We'll find out more about that in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Now we're going to talk about weird news of Iowa. Brian Morelli is associate regional editor for Patch.com in Iowa. Patch is a network of more than 900 websites around the country that connect communities through local news, and there's also a platform for sharing and conversations in local communities. Hyperlocal websites, although it comes from a larger franchise, and Patch has 9 websites in Iowa. Hello, Brian.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, as I mentioned, Patch.com has hyperlocal websites and in Iowa for Ames, Ankeny, Cedar Falls, Iowa City, Marion, Urbandale, Waukee, and West Des Moines. So your job at Patch is to cover the news in all of these communities. When did you start covering weird news?
Well, you know, it's one of those things. I've been a reporter for a long time, and a long time, I guess, by my standards, been for 5 or 6 years. You come across these sort of stories that just kind of pop off the page, and they might be, you know, funny or strange. They might make you cringe, or you know, and so you just find appreciation in these different stories that you see during your day. You know, being a journalist, it could be dry work at times, kind of procedural. And so, you know, we just thought it would be fun to, you know, both for ourselves and for our readers to kind of compile some of the best of the stories that popped out to us and share.
Well, I think weird news has been popular for a very long time. I remember dumb criminal stories always really got a lot of attention when I was growing up. But do you think that the internet has made it a whole lot easier for people to share these weird news stories?
Well, you know, they probably go further than they maybe did before. But I think people have always been, you know, like to share these stories, whether it's, you know, just talk to your neighbor over the fence or, you know, at the water cooler. I mean, I think these stories have always been, you know, some of the lighter things that make life enjoyable. You just kind of hear, you know, it's just fun to talk about and pass along to your friends.
Before you started collecting all of these weird news stories together, did you find that it was the weirder stories that were the most popular on the Patch sites?
You know, I not necessarily. It kind of varies. I mean, but they generally, people do like them, just sort of there's a lot of consistency, but, you know, there's a lot of stories that people are interested in, and these are definitely some of them.
So what was it that made you decide to start collecting them together?
Well, so, you know, we have, you know, as we said, as you mentioned, there's websites all across the state for Patch. So we're in Ames and Ankeny, Cedar Falls, Iowa City, Johnston, Marion, Urbandale, Waukee, and West Des Moines. And I think it's just that it's not just unique to one place. It was just they're popping up everywhere. And they're just kind of funny, you know. You just sort of talk to each other about it, you know, amongst yourselves, you know, like just, you know, you'll either G-chat each other during the day, like, hey, did you hear about this? Or, you know, during your phone calls. And so so I think that's kind of how it started. It's just like, you know, there's a lot of really interesting stories that happen in Iowa. And when you kind of put them all together, it almost seems like, you know, there's like a enough mass, like, hey, there's you know, kind of a common thread here that we can, you know, put out for people.
I'm talking with Brian Morelli of Patch.com in Iowa. We're talking about weird news stories. If you have a favorite weird news story from Iowa in the past year you'd like to talk about, give us a call at 866-780-9100, or you can send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And one of the places that you seem to find a lot of weird stories are on Craigslist. How did you get started mining Craigslist?
Well, you know, I think Craigslist has sort of taken over this role as this sort of, it's this commonplace on the web, you know, people, just so many people use it. And, you know, I personally have, I bought my car on Craigslist. I sold my house on Craigslist. And so, you know, people just use it and go there and they just exchange, so many different things. And, you know, you start exploring the site, and there, you just come across these just really bizarre, you know, thing offerings that people have. And it was actually our Iowa City patch editor, Stephen Schmidt, who sort of kind of took a, you know, just an idea and put it into practice. And Stephen's sort of an enigma in his own right. If you don't follow Stephen, you should check him out on his Twitter and Facebook feeds under the Iowa City patch banner. But he started collecting the stories, just kind of going through the site, going through Craigslist and pulling out some of the stranger and funnier items. And it was so popular. Other of the 900 patch websites began, you know, copying it. And then Huffington Post, which we're affiliated with, actually started doing it as well.
And does it matter? Of course, on Craigslist, somebody can put something up just to get attention, just to be weird, not necessarily being sincere. Does that matter?
Well, you know, you try to pick things that you think, I don't know. I guess it's, we kind of pick the things that sort of pop out to us as being sort of interesting or unique. You know, so it's hard to really say. We don't actually contact, you know, and be like, hey, can I actually get this service, or is that really for sale? It just kind of pops out and sort of amuses us, so we think that, you know, maybe other people might appreciate it as well.
Right. Well, and you do put together headlines to make things as intriguing as possible when you put these things together, like your headline, Marion Craigslist looking to be punched, shot, and shaved by strangers. We're not all talking about the same person wanting all of these these things.
Well, no, but the funny thing is, like, those were literally things that were, you know, people were looking for on Craigslist. There was a guy who says he's a male and he wants to know what it feels like to be shot. I want to be shot in the leg. So, or the one who wanted to be punched. I want to get punched. I need to learn to be able to take a hit over and over. But the funny one, the best one of that grouping was the guy who wanted someone to shave his back, and it wasn't. He prefaced that it's not a. There's nothing sexual intended, and he did have the clippers and razor at the ready.
That one sounds sincere, I gotta say.
Yeah, you know, and some of it is just, you know, life's short. You know, you gotta sometimes just, you know, as I said, there's a lot of dryness and process in life. And so sometimes, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with finding things that make you smile and you can appreciate.
Well, and one of the weird news stories that you selected from the past year is from caucus season. And of course, a lot of weird things happen during the caucuses. But a man dressed up in a robot suit protested Michelle Bachmann. Tell me about that.
So that's one of my favorites, because that was a story that I reported myself. I remember it was a freezing day, and so you have all the elements just kind of to create a memorable theme to begin with. You have Michelle Bachmann coming, who's pretty far right, coming to Iowa City, which is very far left, and it didn't disappoint. So I show up kind of expecting it to be kind of a circus, but I didn't expect to come across a guy that was dressed up in a robot suit. He was in this metallic outfit with this sort of helmet on top, and there was a built-in microphone, and so I went up just like you would, reporter would to anyone else. I had my notebook out and interviewed the guy to find out who he was and what he was doing there, and he told me that he was the RoboProf, who he'd actually been around before. He'd heckled Bill Clinton back in 2007 at the University of Iowa, but he was in town because he said that Michelle Bachmann was a robophobe, and that he was a gay robot, and he felt that she opposed her positions on gays and whether they're human or robot. So.
So he'd had the suit for a while.
Yeah, it seemed like it. And to tell you the truth, so he kind of got the most attention there. But when he went in to – it was at the Hamburg Inn, and he walked in. And Hamburg Inn, there's probably seats maybe 75 people, and there must have been 150 people in there. It was just packed, and Occupy Iowa City was there. They were kind of staged throughout the restaurant, and they were doing this kind of a whispered chant to kind of shout down Bachmann. And then the Bachmann folk actually brought in their own sound system and cranked it up and just sort of blasted music. And so the whisper chant from Occupy group turned into the shout, and it just was this really combustible scene. But anyway, the gay robot walked in and they were like, could you please leave? And he just very politely got left and walked back out. He's like, I'm not here to make a scene, but he just wanted, obviously, to get his message across.
Patch got started to fill a void left by a lot of local newspapers that were disappearing. But Patch in Iowa is in communities where there are local newspapers, like in Iowa City and in Ames, Iowa. How do you see the role of Patch in communities where there's also a newspaper doing this job?
Well, I think Patch is constantly evolving, and we're still pretty young, and so we are changing. But I think the people want to think of Patch as, either an online newspaper or, we want to think in terms of what's already out there. But, the way I don't see us as trying to replace the newspaper or trying to replace television news or radio or anything like that, I think there's a different niche out there for what Patch does that is not trying to, and we're not trying to be the newspaper, and we're not trying to, kind of make people forget about them. So does that help answer?
I think so. You've done a lot of very serious stories since Patch came to Iowa, and obviously this weird news is a very popular feature on Patch. Is there a balancing act that you try to walk there?
Well, yeah. If you think about the old, old-fashioned weekly community newspaper that where you did a little bit of everything, I think in some ways Patch is we do a little bit of everything, and you want to have a diverse offering. And so, as a staff member, I appreciate personally being able to go from a serious story to something on the lighter side. It just makes my job more rich.
There are some of the cute little stories that make it onto Patch that probably wouldn't make it into a newspaper. One of the ones that I enjoyed was from Cedar Falls, where the local pool was accepting ice in lieu of payment this summer.
Yeah, it was. That was a pretty funny story, especially the picture. It's hard to explain the picture over the radio, but the it was, you know, must have been 100 degrees out that day, and so the pool had gotten so warm it was just uncomfortable for people going there to cool off. It must have been, you know, getting close to 90 degrees, and so rather than you know, have people pay the admission, which was $5 or $6, they just had people bring bags of ice as their entrance fee, and then they, you know, would dump it by the wheel the wheelbarrow full into the water to cool it down. So it was actually, the pictures were better than the story, I think.
You also posted your own blog entries from going on Ragbri this year, which is kind of a mix of the weird and some of the serious, too. A weird story, how you almost got a ticket for passing on Ragbri, but there were a lot of people writing about bikers getting cracked down on by law enforcement this summer.
Yeah, well, you know, that was kind of a strange situation. There was, you know, if you've ever been on the Ragbri route, it's, you know, there's a sort, you know, the cyclists essentially have the right to the route, but there's kind of a respect between the cars and the cyclists. You know, the cars generally go, kind of go really slow and you know, make room for the cyclists and vice versa. The cyclists try to, you know, stay on, let the cars pass when they can. But there was so we had actually passed by. There was a stop. I was in a group of maybe 5 or 6 people, and there was a line of cars stopped at a, I forget what they were stopped for, but so we biked past them on the left, and turned out one of them was an undercover officer, and he, you know, speeds past us, and I think someone in the group made the mistake of saying the wrong thing to the car, because, I mean, the guy was going really fast and has been doing like 50 or 60 miles an hour, and the guy basically pulls way ahead and gets out in the middle of the road into the middle of the bike route and orders us all over and threatened to give us a ticket. So luckily, no one did get a ticket. We kept our mouths closed.
So obviously, when you're blogging about something, sharing your own experiences is what you're doing. There must have been a strange sensation, though, as someone who's worked in news, of feeling like you're becoming the story there.
Yeah, well, and that's some of what blogging is. It's a little bit more personal, and the way I've covered Ragbri for 6 years as a journalist and someone who rides it and writes about it. And so it kind of does cross that line where, you know, it is something where you're part of it. And I think people actually like that part of the story as someone who, you know, what's my experience too? My experience is part of the story for something like Ragbri.
Well, Brian, thanks a lot for talking with me today.
Well, thank you.
Brian Morelli is Associate Regional Editor for Patch.com in Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. We had technical support from John Pemble in Des Moines. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email anytime. Respond to what you've heard on the air. Send us ideas for things you'd like to hear on the show. talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up Monday on the show, The Pursuit of Happiness. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.